Take your Bibles and turn to Galatians, Galatians chapter 5. That's already good preaching. While you're turning there, I'm going to read just a couple more of these. 100 reasons and ways to use gospel tracts. Number 4, tracts can stick to the point without compromising. Number 5, tracts never get discouraged. And number 6, tracts are willing to be sent anywhere. All right, so these are just a few more reasons why we ought to be passing out some tracts. I know just a couple weeks ago, I guess it was last week, I preached on drinking, and I really thought the Lord would give me liberty to preach on that 2 weeks in a row, but He has not. And I understand tonight that there are some young, impressionable children in here. I contemplated taking them out altogether, but being that we are on break from the children's program downstairs, my intent and goal this evening is to put it just far enough above their head that it hits the rest of us square between the eyes. And so you listen and you contemplate what we're going to look at tonight. And I promise you, if you are struggling, if you are in bondage, then tonight you can be set free. We've been looking at this thing of the works of the flesh, how that our flesh manufactures these different sins. We've said that some of them are root sins, and they produce other fruit, wicked and evil fruit. We've said some of them are the fruit of our actions. I'm going to read verse 21. It says, envyings. We spend a night talking about that. Murders. We spend a night talking about that. Drunkenness. We spend a night talking about that. And revelings. Revelings. And such the like, of which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. What is reveling? You know, is always associated with drinking. And it carries with it this idea of unrestrained, listen, not passion, but action. Do you understand? Not unrestrained passion, like lasciviousness, like we talked about before, but instead, this is unrestrained action, going into all manner of perversion. And it's no wonder that it's so closely linked to alcohol. You say, listen, I'm not into any of that. That's not who I am, and that's not what I am. You know, there's a verse in Romans that arrested my thinking some time back. Romans 1:32 says this, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but listen, but have pleasure in them that do them. Tonight I'm going to preach on the topic of pornography. It seems so obvious, says regular Playboy writer Damon Brown, if we invent a machine, the first thing we're going to do after making a profit is to use it to watch porn. In the last 150 years, pornography has ridden the heels of every major technology, from the photograph to the film projector to the VHS to the DVD, from the World Wide Web to smartphones. You name it, Brown says, pornography has planted its big flag there first, or at least shortly thereafter. You know, about 20 years ago, the U.S. Department of Justice stated this, never before in the history of telecommunications media in the United States has so much indecent and obscene material been so easily accessible by so many minors in so many American homes with so few restrictions. You know, this was said before the iPhone, before the advent of the 4G phone or 4G signal networks, and even before the term Wi-Fi was trademarked. It was only a few years after the invention of the web browser, and porn had already become a noted problem among young people. The statistics unfortunately, are bleak in our society today. They're actually disturbing. And unless there's a massive culture shift today, and by that I mean revival, things are not going to get any better. The millennial generation is really the first one to grow up with internet technology at their fingertips, from the time they're born till now. And of those millennials, 79% of men say they watch pornography at least once a month. And most of these watch porn several times a week. 64% of women say they watch porn at least once a month. And I'll tell you this, in our society today, watching pornography is becoming the norm. I know for us, in this setting, in this context, it is almost impossible for us to fathom the idea that pornography is normality out there. But I'm telling you it is. And I'm afraid it could be someone in here as well. About 90% of boys and 70% of girls ages 13 to 14 have reported accessing porn at least once. 35% of boys reported viewing porn online too many times to count. 70% of boys and nearly a quarter of girls say they spent at least 30 consecutive minutes viewing internet pornography on at least one occasion. So among youth, watching porn is not only common, but by the way, becoming porn is becoming common. Disgruntled ex-boyfriends or girlfriends post charged pictures, indecent pictures of their former girlfriend or boyfriend online, and it's called revenge porn. And these images are often a catalyst for shaming and cyberbullying and all these different things. 30% of 17-year-olds have received what is commonly referred to as a sext, a indecent photograph of someone of the opposite sex. 60% of teens in the UK say they've been asked for an explicit photo or video of themselves. 22% of young adults age 18 to 24 consider porn to be good for society. And 8% of that age group actually think it is very good for the society. Unbelievable. Listen to this. When asked to prioritize what people consider immoral, teens and young adults consider not recycling to be more immoral than viewing pornography. Pornography, unfortunately, is a powerful tool of education. And it not only turns, it not only leads people to lust, it leads them wanting more and more and more. Study after study shows the more often young people seek out and consume online pornography, the more likely they are to have a recreational attitude toward that intimate relationship, toward intimacy before marriage. And they see that in a positive light, and they will be intimate with a friend at a younger age. In a study of youth between the ages of 10 and 17, researchers found a significant relationship between frequent pornography use and the feelings of loneliness and major depression. Now, we'd like to believe that Christians are immune to the prevalence of pornography. But Paul Fishburne, founder of Adult Video News, is right when he says porn does not have a demographic. It goes across all demographics. And really, we are just now only beginning to see the mass effects, or excuse me, the effects of mass-produced porn on our culture. So those who have grown up online with media in the home have entered really almost adulthood at this point. And over a decade ago, Dr. Judith Reisman called porn an erotoxin, theorizing that the brain itself might be damaged while watching pornography. She speculated that future brain studies would reveal that the surge of neurochemicals and hormones released when someone watches that filth has measurably negative effects on the brain. And I'll tell you this, recent studies have proven her to be correct. There are three things someone needs in order to fulfill their lust and passion in this thing called pornography. The first thing is anonymity. If they can go somewhere and not be known or not be seen or be invisible in some way, listen, it used to be somebody had to go across the tracks into a neighborhood that nobody knew them and to go into a store somewhere and hope that they didn't get carded to get some filthy magazine. But I'm telling you right now, it's being piped into our households. Nobody knows. They think nobody knows who's going to these sites. Let me tell you, every ISP site that you have ever been to has been logged. When I say ISP, I'm talking about the internet address of the website that you've been to has been logged and can be subpoenaed and it can be used in a court of law. But I'll tell you this, whether you think you'll ever get subpoenaed or not, God has registered every single website you've ever been to. Anonymity. Listen, nobody knows that it's me and I can do it, and nobody will ever know. I don't have to show my face. I don't have to put in my name. I don't have to. Nobody will know. God knows. Not only do you need anonymity, you need accessibility. As I said, it used to be you had to go down the street or find something somewhere or scrounge for it. I don't know. But I'm telling you, the accessibility today is so widespread that we as parents, we as Christians, seemingly have put our head in the sand and said, you know what? I don't have to worry about that with my family. I'm telling you, pornography is accessible from any internet connection. It doesn't just have to be on your computer. It doesn't just have to be on a laptop that has Wi-Fi. Listen, it can be on a tablet. It can be on your phone today. The accessibility is there. The person that came up with this said, not only do you need anonymity and accessibility, but you need affordability. And according to this report, millions of free or very cheap images are available online, ready at the fingertip. It's been said if you remove either of those three legs, listen, it's going to help to remove that ability. I want to talk about some of the effects of what watching porn does. And as I told you when we got started, this is some adult information that I'm trying to keep above the young kids' understanding, all right? I understand that there's some young people in here, but you need to understand at the same time, teenagers, adults, moms, dads, grandparents, how this affects people long-term. Number one, watching pornography decreases physical satisfaction, and it trains us to desire something that is not normal, that is not really common, and it puts a desire instead of wholesomeness in what God has created. And like everything else, Satan does, twists it and contorts it, but it leaves the user feeling left out. Watching pornography disconnects us from real relationships. It trains us to detach emotional involvement from that intimate experience. Listen, God has created that physical union. There's nothing dirty about it. There's nothing profane about that. Listen, God created the marriage bed and there's nothing in it that's undefiled. Do you understand that? But it's when Satan takes it and he twists it and he says, listen, you don't have to have any responsibility. You don't have to have anything that you can just feed your passions. It causes a disconnect. By the way, pornography lowers our view of women. I don't have time to go into some of the studies, but there's been studies proven over and over again that people that consistently watch that filth have a degraded view of women. And as I said before, it causes the person that's watching it to want even more. It taps into the neurocircuitry of our brains, making a desire and that rush. And the only way to get that is not only to consume more, but to become more deviant in what you're consuming. So what does God's Word say about pornography? Well, Matthew 5, 28 and 29 describes both the sinfulness and the seriousness of this sin in God's eyes. What's it say? Jesus said, "But I say unto you that whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart." And that's usually where we stop. And we say, listen, if you lust after somebody, you're committing adultery with them in your heart. And that's true. But what is the Lord's remedy for that? He said, "If thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell." Do you see the gravity that God puts on lusting after someone else? Matthew 6, 22 and 23 tells us that those things which we look upon can bring spiritual darkness to our total life. Matthew, I'm not talking about losing salvation, by the way. I'm talking about our relationship, but our fellowship with God. Matthew 6:22 says, "The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, the whole body shall be full of light. But if thy eye be evil, the whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great that darkness." Matthew 15:18-19 tells us that those things which come out of our lives come forth from what? From our heart. There's no more vivid or tragic portrait of this truth than the heinous crimes that result from pornography. Matthew 15:18 says, "But those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man." Verse 19 goes on to say, "For out of the heart proceedeth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, and blasphemies." Think about some of the instances and some of the judgments that landed on people in the Bible that viewed or looked upon someone else's nakedness. What does it say? You think about Noah. Because Ham saw the nakedness of his father and told his brethren. I believe there's two things you can learn or glean from that story. The first one is that the looking upon the nakedness of another and trying to get others to do the same is going to bring judgment. By the way, it was Ham's children that were the ones that really were the recipient of that judgment. They paid the price because of his sin. Now you say, what are you saying? Are you saying that the sins of the father is going to be visited on the sins of the son? That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is there is a correlation. And if you are struggling with this, how can you think that you're going to protect your children from that? Leviticus 18 explicitly forbade every form of nakedness, really except for the husband and wife. So what are the consequences of pornography? I'm going to tell you, we don't have enough time to go through all the consequences. But I believe it leads to impure thoughts. As we said, those things proceed out of the heart. Proverbs 23:7 tells us that as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. I think about a president who has been accused time and time again, a former president, of infidelity. And they said he just had a way of compartmentalizing things. And isn't that true? We can think of ourselves one way and do something and completely block out the idea that we're that person. Let me tell you, if you're looking at that and you're thinking about that and you're dwelling on that, you are that person. As we said before, pornography leads to further indiscretions. James 1, 14 through 15 describes the lusting, the sin, and the death through which every thought passes. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Ephesians 5, 22, 23 through 33 really tells us about the marriage, God's role, and how they represent Christ in the church. And I'll tell you, that filth completely ruins that picture and puts it in the mud and gives an unscriptural portrait of the intimacy of marriage. I found this. I'm going to give you some resources at the end of this message that I hope you'll write down and look up. I forgot which one I got this one out of. I think I got this one out of Your Brain on Porn. It said, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." That's what the gospel says. But pornography culture says, "Relax, for there's nothing wrong with your fantasies." The gospel says, "For you're dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God." The porn culture says this, "Your life is found in your hidden adventures online." 1 Timothy 5:2 says, "Treat the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters, with all purity." I'm not even going to read that one. I don't know what it means. I don't want to say something that's would be coarse or crass. "And this is a life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent." That's what the gospel says in John 17:3. But the culture today says this is real life, that we would never be denied our every sensual desire, no matter how misogynic, how sexist or demeaning. Misogynist. I knew I'd get it right. I always put the emphasis on the wrong syllable in that. All right. Not only that, not only does it give the wrong picture, the wrong idea, the wrong focus, it quenches the Spirit of God in a believer. Romans 1, 24-32 lists the moral and spiritual and social degradation of ancient Rome, which began really with the rejection of God's commandments concerning these physical relationships. Exodus 20, verse 14 clearly tells us, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." I've already said that Jesus explicitly said in Matthew 5:28 that looking with lust is adultery, and pornography is destroying the minds of our culture, not just men, but of women, of marriages, of children. I believe continued usage is going to lead to further perversion, as I said, and impotence. You can read about that in 1 Kings 1:1-4, talking about David when he was old. And this thing brings many diseases. I believe it's judgments of God. And I think that there is this idea that I can get away with it. As I said, it's anonymous. And you don't, and the person that is involved in that, and maybe that's you this morning or this evening, I want you to know, first of all, that if you want to get things right, the first step has to be accountability. It has to be. And so listen, I might preach hard against it, and I'm against it, and I hate this thing, and it's eating our lunch. It's eating our lunch as Christians today. But you need to know that if you want to get this thing right, I'm not against you. Listen, we're for you. I'm for anyone that wants to get right with God and is willing to do the work that it takes to get there. So what can Christians do about this sin of pornography? I think the first thing that we need to do, especially as men, is to simply make a covenant with our eyes that we're not going to look at something that is immoral or filthy. Job 31:1 makes that very clear. He said, "I've made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a maid?" There is a correlation then with what we see and what we think about. We can be careful that our mind is filled only with those things which are pure. Philippians 4:8 lists those things that are worthy of thinking about. We talked about it before. If you're walking in the flesh, you cannot be walking in the Spirit. And if you are walking in the Spirit, you cannot be walking in the flesh. And so as you are tempted to think about something, what you have to do is stop that train of thought and redirect it to that which is good. Think on these things. I hope that you have a burning hatred for pornography. Listen, don't be ambivalent towards it. Don't think, listen, as long as I'm not involved, it's okay. Psalm 97:10 says, "Ye that love the Lord, hate evil. He preserveth the souls of his saints. He delivereth them out of the hand of the wicked." Psalm 101:3 says, "I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me." Not only that, but I believe we need to help others who have become addicted in this sense. There is more and more science, as I said. We don't have time to look at all these different studies that have been done. There's a book called, let me get the name of it. I want to make sure I get it right. It's entitled The Porn Circuit. It talks about understanding your brain and to break porn habits in 90 days. And it talks a lot about the different chemicals that are released and how that their neurons create a larger and deeper rut, if you will. And so the longer that you've been viewing that, the longer the habit's been going on, the harder it is to break away from that. But I'll tell you this, with the power of God, it is not and it will never be impossible to break the bonds of sin. We're to be willing to help and to love someone that is struggling in this area. Listen, man, I want to beat pornography down as hard as I can, but as I said just a few minutes ago, I'm not looking to beat people down. Do you understand? My hatred for pornography is not a hatred for somebody that's using it. It's not a tacit approval, obviously. What I'm saying is we need to love people and help them where they are to get right with God. I want you to remember that the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God, listen, to the pulling down of what? Strongholds. And listen, for some, maybe they struggle with drugs, and for some it might be nicotine, for some it might be alcohol, and for some they might have a preference, if you will, for the sensual. That doesn't make it all right. That means you've got to guard yourself all the more in that area. Casting down what? Imaginations. And every high thing that exalted itself against the knowledge of God. And bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. And I'm just going to tell you something. Whether it's pornography or whether it's daydreaming or whatever it is, any time that you have an imagination that is casting itself against those things which are spiritual, you've got to bring that into captivity. That tells us we can control what we think about. We can control what we meditate on. I'll tell you this, it also tells me that it's work. It's work. It has to be constant vigilance. You cannot say, "I had victory yesterday, and I'll just carry through that today." That's not how it works. If you had victory today, you'd better be doubled up and ready for battle tomorrow. You cannot let down your guard. I've got good news. Romans 12:2 tells us that we can renew our minds. No matter what the studies say about the neurons and these things, I believe that if somebody got off of that and they did another brain study 10 years from now, you know what would happen? Their brain would be just as normal as somebody that never washed it if they were walking in the Spirit. Why? Because I believe the gospel heals. And whether you're talking about spiritually or even something like that physiologically, I believe God can heal that. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Listen, holy, acceptable God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. How do we then renew our mind? It's through the washing of the Word. As we spend time with God, it changes our thinking. When we come across a verse that says, my body is the temple of the Holy Spirit of God, and so I'm not going to put anything in it that's going to defile it. You know what? I've got to change my thinking then. It's going to change the way that I live my life if I'm serious about following what God has said. Lastly, I believe we need to remove every provision for this sin from our houses. You say, preacher, you think we ought to throw all the computers outside and put them in the burn pile? No, that's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying we need to get smart in how we approach this thing called technology. Well, I enjoy technology. Brother Birchfield was talking about my Dick Tracy watch the other day. I'm going to tell you, I want safeguards on that. I need accountability on that. I want to make sure that there's transparency with that. So I'm telling you, if you have an internet connection in your house, there should be some kind of filter on it. It ought to be out in the open somewhere. There is no secrecy. It has to be accountability, not anonymity. You cannot have anonymity. You've got to erase that, even the chance of that, especially for your kids. You say, oh, my kids would never do that. I'm telling you what, I hope they never would, but you don't know what they might stumble into, not even looking for it. You think Satan doesn't want to get his nasty meat hooks into their lives? One of the reports I was reading in there said, all those kids that were in that previous study, the one I started out with, they said their parents had no idea what they were viewing online. I know I'm biased. I believe I have a pretty good sense that we have parents that are involved. But let me tell you, being involved is a constant duty as well. You have to be vigilant on that. You got to be updating that. And don't be afraid to look at the history and to do those things and to educate yourself on how you can find out what is going on with your children's online life. I'm just going to tell you what we do with our family. We have it locked down. We don't allow our children to get on the internet, except it is monitored up on the computer up in the living room. Listen, I'm not telling you something so you can say, oh, Pastor, good job. Listen, I want to get you some ideas of how you can protect your children, how you can protect yourself. You ought to have some kind of accountability software plugged in to your phone, plugged in to your tablet, plugged in to your laptop, plugged in to your computer. Anything that can reach out to the internet ought to be logging something and sending it to somebody else. That gets rid of that anonymity. It removes then that access and puts up a wall or a barrier that says, listen, hopefully the fear of being found out is going to be more than the desire to go out and roll around in the mud in that filth. But that's a step you can take then to start glorifying God in your life. Not just the fear of being caught, but allowing to get past that first couple of weeks and have an accountability partner. Listen, you ought to have somebody that report is going to. Maybe it's a spouse, maybe it's a friend. Listen, maybe it's your pastor, okay? Whatever it might be, you ought to have somebody that is going to get an email that says, hey, you better check this out. There's a red light. There's a siren going off. You need to find out what's going on with this guy. You ought to be able to find somebody that you can call when you are struggling. Say, hey, listen, I'm alone. No one's at home right now. And listen, I'm just struggling with this thing. Will you talk to me for a little bit? Are you willing to be that somebody? Are you willing to allow somebody else to be that person for you? In Ezekiel chapters 8 and 9, As a matter of fact, I want you to see this. Go all the way back to Ezekiel chapter 8. I want you to go all the way down to verse 12. God is allowing Ezekiel to have this vision. I believe he's about to tell him that they're going into captivity, and the reason why is because of their national perversion. But look what it says in verse 12. Then said he unto me, Son of man, hast thou seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark, every man in the chambers of his imagery? For they say, The Lord seeth us not. The Lord hath forsaken the earth. Now listen, I don't believe that's a vision of a television or a computer monitor, I don't know, but it is a representation of people doing something when they thought nobody else would see that they shouldn't have been doing, and God had seen it, and he placed his judgment on their nation. How can we not expect God's judgment on a nation that has 70 or 80% of young boys looking at that filth and seeing it as normality? How is it that we have young ladies, 65%, that are looking at that kind of filth once a month? Listen, I don't want God's judgment on this nation. I want revival. I want to see God do some amazing things in my lifestyle, or excuse me, in my life. But I'm going to tell you, if we have to make sure that we are first dealing with Christians in the house of God. If you read chapter 9, let's go ahead. Look at chapter 9, verse 6. I'm sorry, I started at verse 4. And the Lord said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. He's saying, listen, I want you to go through all Jerusalem, and those people that are mourning and that are repentant and that are sorry for the things that are going on, put a mark on them. Go down to verse 6. It says, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near to any man upon whom is the mark. And begin at where? My sanctuary. It has to start here. It has to start here. You've got to determine in your heart if you're going to hide this thing forever. But we know that God does not bless somebody that is hiding sin. Listen, confess and forsake. Because the person that hides it is going to be...